I'm J.G. Michael, and this is Parallax Views. On this edition of Parallax Views. Congratulations to Elon Musk on the birth of his newborn child. With that being said, no. We won't be sparing Elon any criticism. Which is why we welcome to the show Michael DeCourt, the Lockheed Martin whistleblower who has now set his sights on thoughtfully and pointedly critiquing the autonomous vehicles industry. That is to say, the industry pushing for self-driving cars. And at the forefront of that industry is the man that Michael refers to as the Pied Piper of autonomous vehicles, Elon Musk. Michael argues that the current approach to autonomous vehicles is, in fact, not only reckless, but dangerous to the public and putting lives at risk. More on that in this fascinating conversation that also gets into whistleblowing and Michael's thoughts on the current COVID-19 pandemic and how it relates to the autonomous vehicles industry on this edition of Parallax Views. And now on to our conversation with Michael DeCourt. Welcome to Parallax Views, Michael DeCourt, Lockheed Martin whistleblower, and also the owner of Dactyl. You're a pretty big critic of the autonomous vehicle industry, although I believe that's an oversimplification in some ways, but we'll get to that. How are you doing today, Michael?
Excellent. How are you?
Pretty good. We live in some crazy times right now, but other than that, I am doing well. And also, I should note, I believe you're one of the only guests I've had on so far that is actually in the greater Pittsburgh area, like myself. So that's a first on this show. I guess what I wanted to start with was maybe you could give a little bit of background to my listeners who are unfamiliar with who you are. Maybe I think you could introduce yourself better than I could, especially the whistleblowing stuff.
Yeah, sure. I after 9/11, there was a very large program in Homeland Security for the U.S. Coast Guard to upgrade pretty much everything the Coast Guard has and some Homeland Security stuff. And during that program, the defense contractors were doing things that were significantly unsafe and had major security issues. And at the time, I was at Lockheed Martin, and I was a lead system engineer for the electronic systems for that effort. And they were doing some things that were incredibly avoidable and incredibly wrong, and again, safety and security. So I wound up. In the end, I wound up stopping them, and Lockheed and Martin and Northrop Grumman were taken out of the position as being the lead. The special capabilities and trust that they had from the government after 9/11, which was basically in a different or a new contract structure, was stripped away from them. The Coast Guard took back over the program, and laws were written saying that Homeland Security and DOD can never again utilize defense contractors in that manner. Again, basically the issue was they were allowed to self-certify. So I wound up stopping them. They changed the design. They changed the engineering issues, and Lockheed and Northrop Grumman again were removed from being in charge. The law was created, and that in order to do that, I wound up being on 60 Minutes, lead witness at a congressional hearing. I was the first person to use YouTube as a whistleblower. After that, I'm in a documentary movie called War on Whistleblowers. I'm in a couple books on ethics. I'm in an unofficial history of the U.S. Coast Guard called Rescue Warriors. And there's a book on this, I guess, contract debacle called Complex Contracting.
And also, I wanted to note, during this time, I think you went mano a mano with James Comey, actually. I don't know if you can talk about that or if it's something you're not open to talking about, but I was just curious about the sort of tiff you had with James Comey.
Yeah, so James Comey back then was the lead counsel or attorney for Lockheed Martin. And, you know, I utilized the process the right way to resolve this. So I gave Lockheed Martin a year and a half or whatever to resolve this. I went up all the various chains of command, engineering, program management, quality, ethics. And eventually I got to the board of directors and the CEO. I wrote them. And actually, Lockheed flew me to Bethesda at the corporate headquarters to have a chat with folks. And they basically told me that I was wrong, but wouldn't show me why, and told me that the Coast Guard was okay with everything. And I asked for proof of that. And someone waved a piece of paper and said, "We have it." I said, "Let me read it." And they said, "No." So I said, "Well, then that's not good enough." So I wound up getting a hand-signed letter from James Comey saying that the Coast Guard was perfectly fine with everything, which was not true because months later, especially after the hearing that occurred in April in 2007, the Coast Guard rejected those boats and asked for their money back. So, Mr. Comey, I believe, picked the wrong course. Had he supported me, I mean, just me personally, I would still be at Lockheed, but beyond that, I don't think they would have ever, they would not have had hearings. The law would not have been written, stopping this process from ever happening again. And I think Lockheed would have remained being in charge, even though Northrop Grumman might have had issues because they had problems where the boats were literally cracking. All of them were cracking and buckling. But I think everything would have come out fine on the Lockheed side. So, and James Comey avoids discussing this period of his life in his book. And my problem with him is, politics aside, because I am anti-party, so I'm not a big fan of any group of people or any tribe of more than two people on the planet. But my problem is in isolation, what he did was wrong. And if you're going to go around touting yourself as Mr. Ethics,
man of integrity, as people like to say.
Yeah. So that means you set yourself up for a higher bar. And you should endeavor to meet that. And at the very least, when you do a book, and I guess there's a movie coming out or a series coming out on him, the least you could do is not completely skip that period. And my guess is his answer would be, well, yeah, there's client attorney privilege. I was Lockheed's lead counsel. That's a giant excuse. So that's my problem with James Comey.
And before we get into autonomous vehicles, and this may actually end up being a segue, I was wondering if you could talk about what whistleblowers are up against, because I think we do have a sort of war on whistleblowers environment in this country today where, you know, whistleblowing, I think people often forget how much danger it can put a person in.
Yeah, that danger is not that people don't meet with issues in the United States. I mean, I guess people have been hurt or killed if you go back to Karen Silkwood and others. In the United States, though, I will say there's less danger for whistleblowers than a lot of other countries. And that's mostly, I believe, because of the press. Well, whistleblowers shouldn't even exist, right? I mean, the only reason whistleblowers exist or that name exists is because people generally don't do the right thing. I mean, I'm at least somewhat sympathetic, right? But the average person doesn't do the right thing, right? Because of Maslow's triangle, food, shelter, clothing, ego, And, you know, everybody always wants somebody else to do the right thing. So there's a group of people who, you know, wind up stepping up and I would imagine there's a lot more going on in the world that, you know, than people know about, but, you know, we just don't have enough of those whistleblowers, I guess. Mm-hmm. So people speak up and you have to make the assumption that your career is ruined. I mean, I've talked to people and, you know, people have asked me what they think they should do. And my first advice to them is, you have to assume you're going to fail. You have to assume that you are going to lose your career, and you have to find a way to be okay with that. And then you have to go 110%, because if you're going to pull up, I mean, as it is, you have a very low chance of success. So you have got to be all in and beyond that. Otherwise, there's no point.
Co-host Casey, is there anything you wanted to ask while we're on this topic of Lockheed Martin and whistleblowing? I want to get into autonomous vehicles, but Casey, if you have any questions you wanted to ask Michael.
I guess in the time between when you did your whistleblowing with regards to the integrated deep water system and now, have you noticed any shift in media attention with regards to whistleblowers? Are we as a nation paying more attention to this or less attention, or has things really not changed at all?
That's a good question. So, I don't know. Well, we don't know what we don't know. So I'm a little stuck there. I think that when they say something, they get coverage. I think, you know, again, well, everybody likes a whistleblower as long as they're not whistleblowing on you, right? Or your party or whatever. So, but now, I mean, I see that, you know, President Trump is removing inspectors general left and right, which to me they're kind of whistleblowers. I mean, they have a lot more security than a whistleblower, right? They're like a professional whistleblower whose job it is to blow the whistle. And they're supposed to have, obviously a lot more job security than a normal whistleblower would have. So, I mean, if you look at from that point of view, you know, what message does that send? That says, you know, if you're an inspector general, you'll get removed if the people that you are reporting on don't like what you say. So I think the press might be covering it more, but it might be a worse time actually for whistleblowers under the current administration.
Now, in a way, you've become a whistleblower on the topic of autonomous vehicles. I guess getting into that, how did you go from Lockheed Martin to the world of autonomous vehicles?
Yeah, not by plan. I mean, I didn't, the original issue I didn't go into as a plan. In both of them, I guess I made the mistake of reading something in the press. For whistleblowing, I was there, right? So I volunteered to work on a program because of my background in the Navy and the U.S. State Department. So so that's my bad, I guess, for volunteering. And so that, you know, I stumbled on that. And then I wound up stumbling on the autonomous vehicle issue by reading something, I'm sure, in the paper 3.5 years ago or so. So I read what the processes and approaches that these autonomous vehicle makers are using to create their technology. And I knew right away there was a problem. And so based on my experience, which includes about 10 years of actual high fidelity simulation with Lockheed and the U.S. Air Force Special Operations. So in combination, I think I could say, I guess, with the FAA. So I knew what was capable in simulation, and I've been a system engineer, and I've managed system engineers, and I've used actual best DOD and aerospace and best practices. Where, by the way, the IT and Silicon Valley world has never used and is just a complete debacle.
But yeah, and after Lockheed Martin, you do get involved in the IT world a bit too, I think.
Yeah, well, that was because, I mean, I was almost 15 years, Lockheed terminated me, and then you're kind of blacklisted and you lose your clearance. So I wound up going to what I call commercial IT. And that's where I found out that the engineering and project management practices they use are just really bad. Mm-hmm. And so, that was way more out of necessity than it was out of choice. Mm-hmm. But it gave me insight into what to what goes on in that world, because the vast majority of folks making autonomous vehicles, they come out of IT, right? And first, let me say, one, I want this technology to be successful. And two, I realize these people are incredibly intelligent. Having said that, though, I think what's happening now will literally go down as the largest engineering debacle that the planet has had since everybody thought the world was flat.
I wanted to note that myself, actually, because I say that you're a critic of the industry, but you're not really against the idea of autonomous vehicles. So maybe we should clarify a little bit what your criticism of the sort of industry behind the push for autonomous vehicles is.
Yeah, so I'm not against the technology. I think it's going to be, I'm hoping, a net value added to doing this, right? Because with any new technology, especially in areas like this that have to do with safety and AI, right? And artificial intelligence and machine learning, there's going to be negative unintended consequences. There's going to be things that we learn we can do from it that we haven't even thought of right now. So I am banking on the fact that number one, it will be a net positive. And number two, we can't allow some other nations to be ahead of us either. So we should be doing this. The thing is, we need to do it in a manner that will be successful. There's a lot of hype in the industry, okay? And I know that some of the things I'm going to say here are going to sound like hype, but I'll be glad to talk to anyone and demonstrate most of it. The methods they're using will have zero chance, zero. I mean, it's not remotely possible for them to create a legitimate autonomous vehicle utilizing the approaches they're doing. That those macro areas being public shadow and safety driving. There's major issues here that I'll be glad to go into. And then they predominantly use agile development methodologies, which are bottoms up, which is not going to work because this is a massively complex area and you need system engineering from the top down, at least at the same time you're doing bottoms up. And you need proper simulation, which this industry doesn't have because it thinks gaming technology is the best you can do, and that's not remotely close. And the final thing being deep learning. Deep learning does have some value in some areas, but what's happening is it's basically micro-detecting and micro-classifying things. It's wasting processing time, and it's getting confused too easily. So what people should basically be doing is doing more macro-detection, meaning let's say you're a mining vehicle. A lot of the mining autonomous vehicles don't even care what the object is. They just stop for it. Other times you might need to only classify something as a human and then do your prediction and your planning. But then other times maybe you need to figure out exactly what object or sub-object you're detecting, meaning I need to know what all the signs are exactly. I might need to know exactly what the ambulances are in a set of automobiles. So in those four areas, I think they need to modify, but public shadow safety driving and the simulation are using are the two biggest problems.
In regards to the other point you made earlier, you don't think that Silicon Valley, that these people are, you believe that they are very intelligent. They're not stupid, in other words. What then do you think the problem is with the Silicon Valley approach? Is there a certain level of arrogance and thinking of, oh, well, we sort of know best because IT works and there's not a consideration of other fields that may be able to help with the process of getting these self-driving cars into existence?
Yeah, that's it exactly. It's a perfect storm, right? What you have is, I think Silicon Valley is like a giant Holiday Inn Express, right? So people sleep there and they get up and all of a sudden they have somehow knowledge of every domain available that's out there, right? So I make Twitter, therefore I can make autonomous vehicles. It's a massive amount of arrogance and ignorance. And look, it's no different than almost anybody else. People usually, they use what they know, especially when they're compressed for time, right? I mean, it's Maslow's triangle, food, shelter, clothing, and ego again. And so they doubled down on Agile. They doubled down on what they learned making apps. And the problem is, this is insanely difficult. And I don't think, by the way, since in this case, I usually refer to aerospace and defense, I'm not suggesting those people would make quick work of this either. But I do know that they would know right away that public shadow and safety driving is ridiculous. and it's untenable. You can't spend the time, you can't spend the money, and you can't. And the amount of lives that are going to be lost is going to be off the charts, especially the first child or family, which is coming soon, which is probably going to be in a Tesla. And so they would know right away that you can't use the public domain to do this. You need to use simulation. And some of the people in defense would know what simulation to use. It's unfortunate, but the ground side of defense actually it has the same misconception about gaming technology as the commercial ground side. But the air folks, the folks who do aerospace associated with the FAA, they know what technology is available for simulation, and that's what needs to be leveraged here.
Can we talk a little bit more in detail about what you mean by using simulation? For listeners that may not be familiar with some of the words we're using or what that means.
Yeah, so if we could, let's real quick go through why public shadow and safety driving is a problem and then get simulation, because it'll tie it together better. So shadow driving being the human is driving and the system, you're gathering data or you're doing intention testing, meaning the system, sensors, the perception systems, the planning systems, the execution systems, they're all doing their thing and you're logging what they're doing and you're logging the intention of what they want to do when they act, but they can't act because you're driving. I'm great with that from a process safety point of view. Of course we need data. I mean, if I'm doing simulation, I have got to be informed and validated by the real world. The problem with shadow driving is the amount you would have to do. Rand did a study that said it would be 11 billion miles to prove you're 20% better than a human. If I extrapolate that to 10 times better than a human, which seems to be the common value people are talking about, that's 500 billion miles. Gil Pratt from Toyota said 1 trillion miles. Well, so you can't spend the time to do that. That's absolutely not remotely possible. And to use a very popular example, Elon Musk on his industry day said you have to use the real world because you can't use simulation. Well, okay, he's wrong, but let's set that aside a second. In his industry day, he said, well, look, here's a long tail, right? And the terms long tail and edge case and corner case basically mean things that are rare. Okay, fine. So he put up a picture of a tractor trailer tractor towing other tractors, right? So you have a Kenworth or whatever tractor towing other tractors. It looks like they all fell over like dominoes, and there's one of them towing the others. And he said that was a rare case. Okay, fine. Let's say that's a rare case for argument's sake. Well, how many lifetimes, literal lifetimes, will I spend stumbling on the variations of that scenario, meaning the color of trucks, the angle of the trucks, the quantity of trucks, the location of the trucks, the time of day, what the road patterns are, what is happening around you, what are the other vehicles doing? So I have to stumble on all those variations. And now I have to repeat those variations hundreds, if not thousands of times, because machine learning is incredibly inefficient, right? So it's just not remotely possible to use the real world. You need to use simulation. The problem with the folks in the industry have is that gaming simulation has extremely significant architectural problems. They don't have deterministic or synchronous engines, so they don't determine what runs, when it runs, and the order it runs in. And then they don't federate their models, which means they don't break their models up into individual executables or even sub-executables. So what winds up happening is you can't run enough math fast enough, right? You can't do enough complex math fast enough to do what is necessary here, even though computers are much better than they used to be. They just can't. They choke. And these folks generally don't know how to make an active sensor model like radar or LIDAR. They're basically adapting ray tracing, which is fine for cameras, but it doesn't work for sensors. So because of all of this, they wind up making inferior simulation that's not remotely good enough to be a digital twin, right? Which is another term they abuse. But you have to replicate the world in pretty much every area, or you can't replace it. Because what matters here is that last 2% of that last 10%, or whatever the analogy is, that the last 2% of the 2%, whatever it is. But your simulation has to be good enough for everything you need to do to get to level 4 and 5, or it doesn't do you any good.
I wanted to get into that a little bit. So the Society of Automotive Engineers, they have a levels of driving automation list. And it starts at 0, which is no automation, and ends at full automation, Maybe we could talk about those different levels. And I guess the one that's talked about a lot now is level 4, which would be high automation.
Yeah, so first, I think 2 and 3 shouldn't even exist, right? So
that's partial automation and conditional automation, right?
Yeah, because both of them, to me, they're from the use of a human guinea pig for no reason point of view, they're the same, right? They both require the human to accept handover. So that goes into the other issues. So again, public shadow driving, you can't do enough of it and you can't spend the money, right? I can go into the formula, but I did an incredibly conservative calculation of what it would cost you to do that trillion miles in 10 years. And it's $300 billion per company. I mean, the whole industry spent $16 billion to date and they're all going bankrupt. So they have no chance financially. And then the safety issues get into level 2 and 3. The safety issues are handover and accident scenarios. So in order for me to test these systems, I have to let go of the wheel. I have to let the system make mistakes and I have to accept. And then I have to take control, usually by surprise. Well, humans cannot take control in critical scenarios, generally in a 3 to 45 second range, because you cannot give them enough time to regain proper situation awareness to do the right thing. It's just not possible. And there's a plethora of studies, NASA, others have done this. It's in common sense, basically. But the other one is accident scenarios. If you have to experience scenarios to learn them, that means you have to experience accident scenarios, especially the scenarios that you cannot avoid. So at some point, these safety drivers will have to let go of the wheel and commit suicide, literally, in order for these systems to be trained. And Elon Musk knows this, which is why I think he constantly films himself letting go of the wheel. And they have the ridiculous sensor, torque sensor on the steering wheel that's supposed to engage, track your attention. And it can be defeated with a water bottle or a well-placed orange. Plus, I believe it takes at least eight seconds to react to alarm or slow the car down. Well, how far do you go at 50 miles an hour in 8 seconds? So, so the whole thing is ridiculous. So level 2 and 3 depend on handover. And that's the reason why they shouldn't exist.
Now, with regards to level 4, and I mean, we're not at level 5. I would assume you think that we're not even close to level 4, despite the hype. There's a few things I'm interested in getting into when it comes to this. I'm a little bit confused by some of the terms. I guess level 4 would involve geofencing, which is a term I'm still wrapping my head around.
Yeah, good question. So first, I should say that SAE has a committee called the On-Road Autonomous Driving Committee, and they have a bunch of subcommittees and task forces. I'm on their testing task force, which is the VNV, or Verification and Validation Task Force, and I actually drove the effort to create their simulation task force, so I'm very involved there. And so people know, whenever laws are created through DOT or NHTSA or the automakers make practices, generally SAE coordinates everybody and helps facilitate creating these things. So again, going back to level 4. So yeah, so geofencing is basically supposed to be a subset, right? So let's say level 4, for argument's sake, is all the roads in the world. Now, That's even fanciful, because I don't know if you've seen how they drive in Thailand or Vietnam or India, but you know, like with all those vehicles and people and mopeds or whatever interweaving, right? That's a whole different deal. But let's just say, for argument's sake, it's level 4 in the United States, right? So level 4 in the United States should be on everywhere that's considered a public road in all conditions. You should be able to operate with obvious better than a human. Otherwise, what's the point? Regardless of the factor, 10 times better than a human, whatever it is, you're supposed to operate better than a human. Geofencing is a way to break that into subsets. Now, I think this is abused, but before I get to that, a subset would be like these slow speed shuttles, right? Let's say I'm doing a slow speed shuttle and I'm doing an area of a college campus, right, as an example. That would be an example of geofence. Generally, geofencing is based on the use case or scenarios and what is going on, the environment that they are in. The reason I think that geofencing is being hyped is because of deep learning issues. So I believe as soon as you have any vehicle, regardless of speed, that is in the public domain, you have an obligation to train for the vast majority of patterns of clothing, for example, that that system might have to know, right? So I don't know if you read, but deep learning systems have already gotten confused and it's caused problems. You have a stop sign that people put little pieces of black tape on that confuse the system. You have folks putting little pieces of white tape on the road. I believe it was just two square pieces of white tape, and they forced a Tesla into oncoming traffic. You have researchers who have pattern that they put on a shirt that confuses the system, right? So deep learning has issues with micro detection and classification. So to me, if you're going to use deep learning, you now have the obligation to literally do your due diligence to some sigma level to avoid confusion, which to me would literally mean scraping the internet of all the fabric patterns that exist on the planet and showing that pattern to the system in like a flashcard and making sure it doesn't get confused. So from that standpoint, again, I think geofencing is way, way overhyped. However, again, let's say I'm in a mine, right? I'm in a mine somewhere where you're not even supposed to have humans. Okay, fine. You can consider that obviously a geofence, and you could have it so that, you know, the sensors detect an object and they just stop. They don't even classify. You could say that that is a legitimate geofence.
I want to take this back to Elon Musk. We've mentioned him a few times during this conversation thus far. Actually, the reason I became familiar with your work was an article you wrote entitled "The Pied Piper of Autonomous Vehicles, Elon Musk Needs More Victims." Why the Pied Piper of Autonomous Vehicles? Why do you pick that name for him? And also, in this article, you mentioned that you believe that Musk is being negligent. And I'm assuming people say that's like a heavy accusation. So I want to get into why you've honed in on Elon Musk.
Yeah. So I don't think I've exaggerated any of that. There's zero hype there. I used to have a lot of respect for Elon. Not anymore. I actually think, and there's several things that have occurred. I think he's now a net negative to society. But specifically the Pied Piper. So, obviously, he has an insanely large following. To me, that means you have the responsibility to lead those folks, or provide an example to those folks that is of the highest professional, ethical, and moral caliber. And he's not remotely close to that in this area. So, first, he's using his customers are paying him to be guinea pigs, right? So they're paying him, and he keeps changing the prices, right? So he hasn't delivered. He keeps moving his date. He just moved it again recently, now to 2021. So, and he keeps changing the prices, and he uses his customers as guinea pigs. And of course, they use their families and the public around them. And he constantly tells them that he's going to be done any minute. And he produces a system doesn't use cameras to monitor drivers, which is a far better system than the torque system that they have. And the whole 8 seconds to alarm is absolutely is beyond reckless, right? This is all gross negligence territory. And when he films himself utilizing his own car, that his literature, and he will say, you have to keep your hands on the wheel. He's almost constantly doesn't have his hand. He almost constantly takes his hands off the wheel whenever he's filming. Like in 60 Minutes, I don't even know that his hands were on the wheel. When they did their industry day on YouTube, I don't think their hands were on the wheel. So he knows what he's doing, right? He's sending the right legal message in his literature and what he says, because when his overly devout followers wind up dying, he just bails on them and blames them. But he also sends the message, I need you to let go of the wheel, because if you don't let go of the wheel and disengage, then I'm not going to get the data that I need, because you would have stopped the car from experiencing the threat or the accident that I needed to experience. A clear example of that is the deaths of Joshua Brown and Jeremy Banner. Joshua Brown and Jerry Banner died 3 years apart, which is absolutely ridiculous that the system still fails the exact same way, right? So Joshua Brown died in Florida 3 years ago when a tractor trailer was crossing on a road that it was legal to do this. It was crossing. Jeremy Banner was not, he did not have his hands on the wheel. And he was, you know, because he trusted these systems and what Elon Musk, you know, wink, wink, says and does. and he died when his car went underneath the trailer. And then 3 years later, Jeremy Banner had the exact same thing happen. First of all, this can be done in simulation and test tracks. There is zero reason to do that in the public domain. Absolutely zero. Setting that aside, though, the system failed. The NTSB said the system failed for several reasons, because the radar shot underneath the vehicle and because the cameras confused the trailer for the sky. So, and he doesn't use LiDAR, which is another grossly negligent problem, because I am not for any sense, for or against any sensor. What I am for is competence. And right now, the radars and cameras out there that are being used can't replace what LiDAR brings in well enough, especially the system that Tesla uses. Their radar, as it is, has to ignore stationary objects or crossing objects because they can't determine where they are laterally. So they ignore them. So for all those reasons, I have a problem with what Elon Musk is doing. He's got 750,000 of these overly trusting guinea pigs driving around. Six people have died so far in Teslas needlessly, and just by the odds, right? Because they have 750,000 vehicles, where everyone else in the United States that's using paid safety drivers, I think there's a total of 1,600 total across all the vendors or all the autonomous vehicle makers. So he has so many more vehicles out there, and plus the these ridiculous systems with the torque sensing and his videos. Odds are the first child or family that dies will be in a Tesla. And children have already been actually injured. There was a accident in Russia months ago where a gentleman hit a tow truck and his children were injured, although not significant.
I actually wanted to ask you about that more in depth. For people that may have trouble abstracting it all, what are the type of scenarios in which we could see children, innocent civilians, etc., getting severely injured in the future because of this horrible approach people have taken to autonomous vehicles?
So literally almost any scenario that could cause an accident. And the reason I say that is because while these companies have simulation and they use the heck out of it and they're bragging about how many tens of millions of miles they're doing, like Waymo, their simulation is inadequate for complex scenarios and scenarios where there's a difference between the fidelity of the model and the real world, right? So if your simulation and modeling is not accurate enough, you will get to a point where you have a deviation between what the simulation thinks the world would be in that scenario and what the real world is. But the system won't know the difference, right? Because it doesn't know. So it will create a plan that will be inadequate. So you'll get to the real world and something will be off in the timing or the veracity at which you apply braking or acceleration or maneuvering. And also because machine learning is insanely inefficient, it takes massive amounts of repetition, right? And almost any scenario that could cause an accident, it should be considered one of the problem scenarios. And the reason why we're not having more accidents is because a lot of companies are staying away from these kind of scenarios because they're scared to death since Alain Herzberg died in the Uber. Most of the drivers, the safety drivers, whether they're in a Tesla or not, have no interest in committing suicide, right? They don't want to be kamikaze drivers. So, we have this period where, they're all scared to death. But now Elon released his upgrade where, he's using his test subjects to test for now intersections with traffic lights. And the system is so bad that it's stopping for green lights, right? So it's ridiculous. Again, why do I need the real? I don't need the real world for this. Simulation can do the vast majority. At the very least, use the best simulation, which Elon has no idea what that is. Actually, either does his competitors, most of them. And then do your due diligence and then show why you need to now graduate to the public. Meaning, show me on a test track, show me in simulation that you've done the best you can. And now once you go to the public, please tell me why you need to use the public as guinea pigs. Why do I need the elderly, the service members and their families, or children, right? I mean, there are shuttles that have children in them. NHTSA actually wound up stopping an autonomous vehicle maker from using elementary school children in a test shuttle in Babcock Ranch, Florida, because they said that was going too far. which is terrific. It's nice that NHTSA gets that. But these kids who they now saved get out of that vehicle and they go into a Tesla or a Waymo. Now, how's it any different? So anyway, so that's my issue there with Elon and sorry.
Well, I just want to note, you note in your article, The Pied Piper of Autonomous Vehicles, one of Elon's quote-unquote autopilot systems hit a stationary vehicle. And as you point out, one day that's going to be a family or child in one of those vehicles that it hits. Mm-hmm. And I really want to drive that point home because this is dangerous territory and it needs to be taken very, very deadly seriously. And I think there's been a sort of turning of the tide in some ways when it comes to addressing this issue.
Yeah, so it's been several stationary objects. They've hit two fire trucks, and killing someone. They've hit a passenger vehicle. They've hit a tow truck. They've hit a street sweeper. They've hit a police car, and there's been several deaths. One of them, and it's not widely known because it was in Japan, and they did not release the names of the victim. But what happened is a gentleman was on a motorcycle and he hit a car in front of him, and he fell down. And people started gathering to help the person on the motorcycle. A gentleman in a Tesla who said he trusted the Tesla and thought he could fall asleep, drove through the crowd and ran over and killed the motorcycle rider who was laying on the road trying to get treatment. So it's ridiculous to slam into a large stationary vehicle.
I want to kick this over to Casey to ask a question or two, but first, you mentioned that Elon has competitors. I don't want to make it out that Elon Musk is the only player in this game. There are other parties involved in all of this, correct?
Yeah, most of the autonomous vehicle makers and OEMs are doing this wrong. Elon, to me, is just the most egregious for several reasons, because he doesn't use LiDAR, because he has so many more vehicles, because he uses his customers as his safety or drivers or guinea pigs, because he doesn't have the proper monitoring and alarm system, and because he puts out videos where he lets go of the wheel constantly, right? So that's the whole Pied Piper thing. So he's just the most egregious.
Yeah. And he's also, I should note too, because you recently wrote about this, I guess he's now using HD maps for his quote unquote autopilot. After saying that HD maps and LiDAR are just a crutch, which it seems like he's contradicting himself.
Yeah, he wouldn't say it was HD maps. He just calls it data. What he's doing is they're gathering data on parking lots so that they can have that information for next time, right? So that's all HD maps are, right? HD maps is somebody scanned, somebody drove a vehicle, which, by the way, utilizing proper simulation, you can make most HD maps without ever driving those roads, and you can do it for 75% cheaper than driving around with real sensors, believe it or not. An HD map is, you see these vehicles loaded with sensors. Usually it's cameras and LiDAR, and they drive around different directions. And what they do is they create, it's called a map, but they create basically a library of the world and the locations of items. So, for example, it knows where the traffic lights are, and it has a geolocation for those lights. It knows where the curbs are. It knows where the lines are. So it creates, this 3D map of what things are in the world and basically exactly where they are, so that it has some reference point when it gets to those areas, because they're unable to do that dynamically. Now, in Elon's defense, actually, so here's the thing. I actually think that there should be no external data source required for these vehicles to drive most of the time and be safe, whether it's an HD map or even GPS, actually, or this V2X they're talking about with sending data around, which there's problems with. But I think these systems need to be self-reliant, because any of those data sources could be missing or corrupt or incorrect at any given time. So because of that, I think, again, these and people are using this data as a crutch to a large degree, too, which is what Elon says. So I think he's correct about the goal. It's just that his way of getting there is ridiculous, because, again, His system suffers tremendously because it doesn't have LiDAR. And the reason he doesn't add LiDAR now is because, one, his ego, and two, because I believe his hardware isn't set up to facilitate a LiDAR, and it would be insanely expensive for him to add that now. Not necessarily to LiDAR itself, but to his computer interface and the rest of the system.
Casey, I wanted to kick it over to you in case you had any questions you wanted to ask Michael.
Yeah, I got two. I guess the first one would be, it seems like all of these issues that are not just Tesla, but which Tesla and Musk in particular kind of personify, all these issues are at their root like cost-saving measures. Like, you're using your customers to do the field tests. You're not using what I assume is a more expensive equipment system to better handle situations. You're not investing enough in simulations and all this other stuff. So, and it's kind of because, as you said, very early on in this interview, it would cost about $300 billion to do the kind of roadside testing necessary to even come close to feeling comfortable in the autonomous car being better than a human at driving. So would these problems be fixed in some way if funding were to, by some miracle, be secured? Or is this more of like an inherent problem in the development towards autonomous driving?
Yeah, so let's say, because I wrote an article on this, let's say all the autonomous vehicles got together, pulled together their engineers and their money, they would still never get remotely close, because you can't do it in 10 years, right? So that's the $300 billion in cost to do it in 10 years, but you can't do it in 10 years because you can't avail yourself of enough scenarios and variations of scenarios and rerun them hundreds or thousands of times each, because you can't repeat them in the real world because you can't control the world. It's ridiculous. So they don't have the time. Who has eternity? I don't know who has that. I mean, I guess, you know, if you could find some vampires or maybe zombies who could work it out for you, I suppose. So, it's crazy. Now, Elon, though, he's killing it because he has figured out a way to make money on this, right? So he not only has his human guinea pigs out there risking their lives and the public and their families' lives, but they pay him. They pay him for that, right? So, and he keeps raising the cost, right? So it goes from $3,000 to $7,000 now or whatever it is. And, you know, so, it's just absolutely ridiculous on pretty much every level. If they did it with the proper simulation, right? So if the next question would be, so if they use the proper simulation, how does that work? I think companies with Waymo's, resources and money, I think you could do most of the United States within 10 years and legitimate geofencing in 5. If you use the right simulation and approach to doing this, I think you could get there. The smaller companies would probably still struggle a little bit because there's a lot of work involved, unless they chose to use less deep learning, right? Using just less deep learning would be tremendously helpful as well.
Okay. And that kind of solves what would have been the second question. So I guess I'll move on to a third one. We've kind of been skirting around the prescient topic. Everyone is still dealing with COVID-19. Mm-hmm. So is there any kind of connection between COVID-19 and what's going on in the autonomous vehicle industry?
Yeah, they wouldn't have safety drivers to lay off if they were using proper simulation. This would not be affecting these companies, right? They all could work from home, right? You would have a system at work and use the cloud to some extent, and you would use simulation for most of this, and you would have no need during this period whatsoever, I believe, to even do shadow driving, because you can do enough in simulation for years and years to where you don't even need the real world. For example, I would create the most complex scenarios and work backwards, right? Which is what aerospace does, right? So I would, let's say it's a six-lane cross merge, a circle, a roundabout, and a complex intersection. I could have three teams working those in parallel in the most complex scenarios and weather on day one, right? Because now I'm modeling it correctly in simulation, right? Including sensors, right? So people who are listening to this thinking, I'll tell you how far it goes. Right. We could do hundreds of exact radars, not sample radars, not something like a radar. We can do hundreds of radars faster than real time in an exact environment, interacting with each other, including all of the reflection caused by every radar, right? So we can model, DoD tech can model all those radars interacting with each other to include first, second, and even third reflections from every single other radar, okay? So that's the level you have to go here. But again, if you use simulation properly, the vast majority of those people wouldn't have to go into work. So we wouldn't have a problem.
In that regard, maybe we could elaborate just a little bit more on that, that idea of wouldn't have a problem if we did things differently. And I want to mention, if people are more interested in COVID-19 and the autonomous vehicle makers, read Michael's article, COVID-19 would barely impact the autonomous vehicle makers if they used the right simulation the right way. I highly recommend that. That's on medium.com. Maybe we could talk a little bit more about solutions, because I always like to, end on a more positive note, if you will. What's the better way that we can do this?
Yep. So first, let me declare a conflict of interest. Now, it's also what makes people entrepreneurs, but I don't want to skirt the conflict of interest. So the conflict of interest being, well, Mike DeCourt, you seem to know what all the problems are, right? Because I pay attention to this industry, and I'm saying more than anyone else is saying, and I'm saying it louder. And then miraculously, I believe I have the only simulation system that can remotely do this correctly. So that's a conflict of interest. I actually tried to, just so everybody knows, I tried to avoid it. I tried to help the simulation companies that are in this industry years ago. And either they wouldn't listen to me because they were the IT gaming Silicon Valley folks, or the other folks who work with the car makers, they didn't want to change their systems. So I went off and worked with people in defense and aerospace, and we're creating what we're trying to bring to market. But the solution is a couple. Number one, don't use so much deep learning, meaning use deep learning when you have to micro classify or detect an object, right? Meaning like specific signs. But for people, why do you have to micro classify things? So let me give you an example. When you're driving down the road in a city and you see off in the distance what could be 5 or 10 people, you have no idea. You could care less that it's 5 or 10 people. You make calculations based on the odds that are massively in your favor, meaning you assume that they're not going to run out in front of you. You don't care if there's 5 to 10 of them. And then you scan somewhere else. And what you do is you make all these assumptions that have very, very, very high odds in your favor. And then you scan around back and forth. You scan around back and forth to try to invalidate, to see if those assumptions are being invalidated, right? You don't care, again, that there's 10 people and that one of them is a black female with a red sweater and one of them's a child with red hair. You don't care about all these little tiny things that you're spending all this time scanning on with deep learning, right? So use less deep learning. The other thing is do a top-down approach as well as bottoms-up. Do proper system engineering, and then around simulation, use the proper simulation so that you can create a legitimate digital twin, and shift 99.9% of that development and testing over to simulation. And again, it should be informed and validated by the real world, which is what the FAA has been doing through their QTG or Part 60 testing for over 25 years. So that, as I said, is what you should do. I actually have an article on this called, I forget the entire title, but it's the HD map of developing an autonomous vehicle. I lay out these individual areas and basically what should be done. And then I link to other articles that provide more information.
Also, I wanted to note, and this is more a broader based sort of thing I wanted to pick your brain about. I noticed on your social media, you posted a link about a California city official saying that COVID-19 should be allowed to fix society by calling the elderly. And I like that you stated this line of thinking is really horrible. We need to get rid of this like calling the human herd mentality. But I sort of see a parallel there with the problems with the autonomous vehicle industry, because it seems like what Elon Musk and others are doing is they're saying, well, to make an omelet, you have to break a few legs. A few people may die, but it's necessary. And I just want you to address this mentality that seems widespread in some ways amongst certain segments of our population that just have no regard really for public safety and human life.
Yeah, I agree. It's unfortunate. Humanity is quite depressing at times. Let me go back to the thing with the breaking actually of legs in your analogy there. The entire autonomous vehicle community, including NHTSA, is under this false belief or myth that that the current approach, public shadow and safety driving, is the best or only way to do this, and that through doing it, they will create level 4 vehicles and those will save lives. So therefore, the lives that they take or the people that they injure are worth it because they would have saved lives. Now, that logic actually holds true in some areas in life, right? Because things aren't perfect, right? The drug industry, right? We hope they do their due diligence. Along the way, people are injured or do die. But the vast majority of the time, lives are saved. So what we want is for the human race to do its due diligence, meaning, are we doing our ethical, moral, and professional due diligence, right? And in this case of the autonomous vehicles, that's not remotely the case, because they'll never get to level 4. They'll never save the lives that would save. Therefore, the lives of those safety drivers that are lost are for nothing. On this thing with the culling, first, let me say, obviously, this is a personal opinion in this area. A little background. I am I'm anti-party. I think parties are the problem, the biggest problem that we have. Because people tend to be tribal. They tend to align with groups. That's why any group over 2 gets to be a problem. It's okay when you're a sports fan. It's not okay necessarily when it gets out of hand. So the whole culling thing to me is actually just some people showing what they've always believed, which is, people are expendable. And I think it's beyond just the elderly. I mean, this is affecting the minorities more than it is white people, and I think they realize that as well. But having said that, this is an incredibly complex issue where the side of herd immunity actually has some points, right? Because we've used herd immunity before, because calculations were made on what is the best thing for society, and the people who are arguing for the herd immunity have some points, right? We are not doing some people are skipping going to see the doctor right now for other issues which they could die for. That is legitimate. The economic crisis could cause problems for people, so that is legitimate. So at the end of the day, my personal opinion is you need to figure out what is the best thing you can do that works all the way around, and it shouldn't be whatever pro-Democrat or pro-Republican or whatever. It should be based on numbers, which might be unfortunate at the end of the day. But again, the best we can do is our due diligence at the time with the science that we have and move forward. My personal opinion on the way to do that is we should not be opening up as much as we are without having enough testing so that we can do the contact tracing and all the rest of it, so that we could try to limit the amount of people that are killed. I mean, who did that? Denmark. They went ahead. Isn't it Denmark who did the they did the herd immunity?
Sweden. Sweden. Yeah.
Sorry, my blessed. So, I think their death rate was like twice ours. And also, as I understand it, it's a little easier for them to do it than us. Right? Meaning, if you're going to go ahead and do the let's isolate the people who are at risk thing, I've asked this question a bunch, and I literally have gotten no answer to these two questions. Number one, if you do that, how do you actually isolate those people? If they have family members and connections, how do you actually isolate them? Number one. And number two, how do you do it in a way so that the hospitals don't get overloaded, right? So to me, you have to find whatever that area is, not a compromise, because I'm not a big fan of compromise, because it automatically means you're giving up on the best solution. But somewhere in there is a solution, and probably county by county, literally, where you figure out what is the best that we can do to minimize the loss of life or injury from COVID, but then to also have people who, for example, might have a heart condition or cancer or whatever, who aren't going to the doctor. It's somewhere in between. And we need to learn, we should be humans first, Americans second, and then from there, somewhere way down the list should be a Republican or Democrat, in my opinion, because this whole tribal thing just means you wind up supporting your side blindly and completely. And sorry, but life is not like that. And issues and the nuances of issues should matter way more than which team you're supporting.
In closing, I can't recommend my listeners enough. They really need to read your work. Just the points you've made about public shadow driving. I mean, the amount of time and money it would take. I mean, over $3 billion to be spent by each AV maker and 1 trillion miles to be driven. I think is what you say in one article, the Pied Piper article. I mean, these things need to be taken into consideration. And also, I just wanted to ask, have you had anyone try to like challenge what you're saying? I mean, have people in the autonomous vehicle industry tried to debate you at all? I mean, has there been any pushback? Have you had any debates or anything?
No, I try. And basically, I go right at the people in the industry. So, I mean, I was the first person to use YouTube as a whistleblower, which might make me literally the first troll. So I do. I confront people because, and I realize that can be off-putting. And as a businessman, that is not necessarily in my best interest if I'm trying to sell a system, because sales 101 does not teach you to go to your customers and tell them that their 2 children are incredibly unattractive. And that being public shadow and safety driving and your use of the wrong simulation. The thing is, though, human nature has told us, and the patterns of humanity have told us, that generally echo chambers do not change because somebody comes along and says, please. Usually what needs to happen is some forcing factors. Bankruptcy, which is occurring now. I mean, Starsky Robotics went bankrupt. Waymo lost 85% of their value. 5AI in England, their CEO said, yeah, we don't have hundreds of billions of dollars to spend, so we're going to get out of the development part of this. And Gil Pratt from Toyota said, yeah, just because we can't do it now doesn't mean we're never going to do it. So the industry is currently going bankrupt, and they've hurt people. They haven't hurt their first child. They haven't killed their first child or family yet, but unfortunately they will, and probably very soon. So, I think that... I use the interventionist, I guess, approach because I don't know that there's a better way to get people's attention. And I've been getting people's attention. I have now people from the OEMs and autonomous vehicle makers contacting me. I mean, I went from 3 years ago, who's the arrogant aerospace guy who's nuts, to having many, many demos of the technology. But the problem now is, I call it incremental epiphanies. You got to get people to understand what they're doing is incorrect. So it's a technical issue, but then you have a courage issue. So, and this is why I say the two unattractive children, these people need to go to their management and say, hey, you know, pretty much everything we're doing is wrong. We need to flip the paradigm and do the opposite. So, but that isn't necessarily going to work out for their employment or the clique that they're in until there's a forcing factor, which again is the bankruptcy or the harming of people. So we're right at that inflection point now. And what I'm finding is that people realize what I'm trying to do, that I'm trying to help, that I have a solution. I'm not just complaining. And they can see my past and, you know, the background I have and what I did before with DOD and Homeland Security. So
they can see that you have integrity.
Yes, hopefully. And also, here's the thing. You're doing something, right, incredibly wrong, and it's hurting people. Are you on high enough ground to point to that messenger and say, and shoot the messenger? No. I mean, I don't think I'm disrespectful of what I do. I am pretty pointed and direct. But again, this has to do with life or death. It's not a game. So anyway, so I think we're within 3 or 4 months of a complete flip. And once one of these large autonomous vehicle makers make the flip, the other are just gonna, you know, 1 or 2 news articles, and the change will occur so fast, our ears will pop from the sudden change in air pressure of everybody flipping to the other side.
Well, Michael DeCourt, I want to thank you for coming on Parallax Views. If you can, let my listeners know how they can keep up with your work. And as I said, I always like to end on a positive note. If you think there's any silver lining in all of this, you know, please throw it out there.
So, well, I'm on LinkedIn a lot. I post a little bit on Twitter. My You can find me by my name on LinkedIn, on Twitter. I am actually, I think you can find me by my name too, but my handle is IMISPGH. That's I Miss Pittsburgh, actually, with one S missing. I mean, I have Medium article. And also, you can also go to Medium and look me up there as well. As far as the positive note, I guess I struggle a little because I think it's unfortunate. The coincidence of the autonomous vehicle world and also what's happening with COVID-19. I believe that most of humanity is good. It's just that, unfortunately, the folks that do bad often wind up to have a lot of power, they have more money. So, you know, they're more likely to press that as opposed to the average person who has a family to worry about. Because I'm sympathetic with people who don't whistleblow, right? Because, I lost my career. I went bankrupt, right? So I get it. So from a positive side, I think that overall humanity is good. We just got to find a way to help them get to where they need to be.
And as you said, it does seem like the tide is turning. What you were pointing out now about autonomous vehicles, I think it's starting to get more, you're gaining steam in your criticisms.
Good, because it's going on 4 years. So personally, I'll keep going. But I just as soon stop, pushing on folks and see if we can't move in the right direction.
Thank you again, Michael DeCourt, for coming on Parallax Views.
Thank you.
Well, that does it for this edition of Parallax Views. I hope you found our conversation with Michael DeCourt, the former Lockheed Martin whistleblower, now taking it to Elon Musk and the autonomous vehicles industry, to be very informative. Let me know what you thought about this edition of Parallax Views by dropping me a line on Twitter at @viewsparallax or by email at parallaxviewspod@protonmail.com. Also, if you can, please consider supporting me on Twitter, where you can hear archived editions of the Parallax Views program, as well as the Parallax Views current events / cultural ranting hour, otherwise known as Parallax Views of the Week That Was, and a few video interviews and bonus interviews here and there. All that and more on patreon.com/parallaxviews. That's patreon.com/parallaxviews. Your contributions are very much appreciated. They are what allow me to keep going. And with that being said, until next time, you've been listening to Parallax Views with Parallax Views. To Parallax Views with Parallax Views.
The way out is not simply to say don't do it, just to prohibit. If nothing else, if we don't do it, others will be doing it like crazy. So, you know, we have to confront the problem. But no, basically, I know of the great anxiety problems, new forms of control, but it's also new forms of freedom. This is why I always emphasize that internet and all this new digital stuff, it's a very ambiguous phenomenon, but it's the field of struggle. New forms of enslavement, but at the same time, new incredible forms of freedom. We have to accept the fight with no nostalgia for old, allegedly more authentic communities or whatever. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid.